How are agencies successfully utilizing video technology? Go to the Video Teleconferencing Center at federalnewsradio.com, keyword video, sponsored by Tanberg, now a part of Cisco.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us here as every Wednesday. And we've got a really good lineup today. There's something really for everybody. We're going to be talking with a top team from the Federal Times newspaper and Defense Times about the U.S. Postal Service changes, about the tensions between the Obama administration and federal unions, what's going on in the Congress. Going to be talking about TRICARE, which is a very important health insurance for members of the military family. And finally, Vitol Shkevorensky, the president of AFGE's Council 222 Social Security, is going to give us a fill-in on the contract situation or lack of it at the Social Security Administration. I think they've been 1 year now without a contract, and negotiations reopened today, so we're going to be really covering the waterfront. And without further ado, I want to go to talk to Sean Riley. He covers the U.S. Postal Service for the Federal Times, and Sean originally broke the story about the Postal Service and some of the major changes that it's planning. And then, Sean, are you with us?
I am. Good to be with you, Mike.
Hey, thank you, sir. Listen, I got two questions here. In today's column, I led off by saying that the Postal Service is covering it's a canary that other, like the canary in the coal mine, that other federal agencies should be watching it because of its problems. And I made a reference to a dying death of a thousand cuts because of the internet, FedEx, and all these technological changes. But I heard from the American Postal Workers Union and from several postal workers, and here's what the APW said to me. They said, the biggest single factor in the Postal Service money problems is the requirement, and it was a 2006 law, that they be pre-fund retiree benefits. They said that before it sells its first stamp, it is over $5 billion in debt, and that they're looking at 75-year liabilities in the space of 10 years. And A, how true is that? And B, I've never heard of any other federal agency or private sector firm, for that matter, that has to pre-fund retiree benefits. That's called what, an unfunded liability, I believe.
Yeah, it's accurate up to a point. There is no, it's in the law that the Postal Service every year has to make a payment of approximately $5.5 billion, or prepayment, I guess you should say, into its retiree health fund. The idea is to fund, to take care of future retiree health liabilities. As far as I know, it is unique to the Postal Service. I think the idea was when the 2006 law was written that you wanted to pre-fund those expenses, unlike trying to carry them on your books later on and deal with them on a pay-as-you-go basis. When that law was passed, the Postal Service thought they could handle that, but since then, as we all know, there's been a precipitous decline in mail volume. They've been losing money on other fronts, what you're now seeing is a concerted effort to try and get Congress to relax or waive that requirement. Back in 2009, actually, Congress agreed to defer most of the payment that was required that year. They didn't do that for 2010, however, and now the Postal Service is projecting that it will run out of money this September if it has to make the full $5.5 billion payment. That said, there's still the Postal Service and the new Postmaster General alluded to this last week, still faces significant structural challenges. Their mail volume has stabilized, but they're still losing a first-class business, and as he said, that's what pays the bills. So I think certainly they would give it, so the Postal Service would get some relief if this requirement were relaxed or waived, but I don't think it's going to solve its longer-term problems.
Got a similar email from a city or letter carrier, and he said the same thing, that it's unfair to the Postal Service because it's being charged a requirement that isn't required of any other federal agency.
Well, that's true, but the Postal Service isn't like any other federal agency. It's basically, it doesn't get any taxpayer support for operating expenses. And you could argue, and I think this was Congress's rationale when they authorized or enacted this requirement back in 2006, is that you want to try and take care of these expenses in advance, unlike if you look at a lot of state and local governments that are facing huge liabilities in the future for retiree health care that currently aren't funded. The idea is to get these expenses taken care of up front so you don't have to worry about them later on.
It's funny. I remember it's probably 20 years now when I've had to learn the definition of unfunded liability, and it is, in this case, you have a 22-year-old newly hired postal worker, and the Postal Service has to make assumptions as to what his or her retirement payments will be for 20 or 30 years after their retirement. And it got, it seemed to me, it got so complicated and so contentious that they just dropped it as an issue. It went away, and it hasn't come back until this 2006 imposition on the Postal Service.
Well, just because you didn't want to calculate it was too complicated doesn't mean it isn't out there as an issue, and I think there are additional requirements. I'm not sure to what extent they now apply to the Postal Service, but certainly for many local, many governmental agencies, they are now required to at least make an estimated guess as to what those expenses are. And they certainly will be there, particularly as you've got, a population that's generally living longer. And as we all know, when you get older, you tend to incur more health care expenses.
John, I know you were at the Postmaster General's press conference earlier this week, and we got an interesting email from someone at the Treasury, the IRS counsel's office. And she says, I think we're missing a great opportunity with the post office. And it wouldn't take much cooperation with other federal agencies to make it work. Anyhow, what she's talking about is making post offices a one-stop shopping center for a variety of things, including Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and various federal agencies. The IRS could have a separate taxpayer assistance center in a larger post office. Is this something that's occurred to the postal brass?
I'm honestly not sure. I think they're interested in anything that might increase revenue and reduce expenses. That certainly sounds like a possibility. I don't know to what extent, current law would, either allow that or prohibit it. It certainly sounds like an idea worth exploring.
It really does. I mean, imagine the various it's like the difference in the states in the Washington area. One state makes it you can go get a driver's license in a shopping mall and makes it very easy. And where I happen to live, you have to make a trek to, of many miles and go to different places. So that would be a wonderful, wonderful thing. So what's happening with the Postal Service? What next? Because their contracts have expired with the unions, have they not?
Got four unions, currently negotiating with two, the American Postal Workers Union and the National Rural Letter Carriers Association. Both of those contracts formally expired back in November, but an impasse was declared in talks with the Rural Letter Carriers Association. Nonetheless, talks are continuing for both, I think all sides, from what they've told me, still hope to reach an agreement as opposed to going to arbitration. I think so. That's one thing they want to take off. I think they'd like to get resolved as quickly as possible. And then the contracts with the other two unions expire this November. So that will be something else they'll have to deal with. Right now, I think new Postmaster General Mr. Donahue is looking for a deputy PMG who will be spending, at least from what I saw in the job description, spending a lot of time on Capitol Hill. Another issue they're trying to take care of, and he says will be a priority, is there was an report that identified about a $6.9 billion overpayment into the federal employees' retirement system, and they'd like to get that money back because it is continuing to accrue, and they'd like to get that resolved as soon as possible. And he also announced they're going to seek to eliminate 7,500 jobs, line supervisors, postmasters, administrative folks, as part of an overall restructuring that's supposed to save around $700 million, I think, for the rest of this fiscal year. So a lot going on. They announced a new deal with eBay that's supposed to increase revenue there from about $700 million to $1.4 billion. And Donahue says he's going to be going out talking to advertisers who don't currently use the Postal Service, don't make much use of it, trying to get them to sign on.
Did I read somewhere that there was a possibility that the wages and the retirement package might be different for future hires?
I think that's something the National Rural Letter Carriers Association was complaining about, that they wanted essentially a two-tier wage structure, which has been used, for example, in the auto industry in talks between the big three, in contracts with some of the big three automakers and the UAW. I think there's always a lot of resistance among that from unions because it essentially creates, obviously, two types of employees and can lead to tension between folks who have been, older employees and those who are just coming in. All sides have been pretty tight-lipped about exactly what's being discussed, but yeah, I think that is something that the Postal Service would like to pursue from everything I know.
Do you think it's fair to, and I didn't want to overhype this, but to say that the Postal Service is something like the canary in the coal mine as far as other federal agencies are concerned?
To some extent, I think that's absolutely the case. Again, the Postal Service is different in that it is not, for the most part, does not receive direct taxpayer funding. But certainly a lot of the issues that it's confronting in terms of retiree costs and presumably pensions down the road are issues that are going to be, I think, already appeared to have gotten the eye of the new Republican majority in Congress and will are likely to be extended to other parts of the federal workforce.
I know in the past, whenever they've talked about eliminating post offices, there is a hue and cry from many members of Congress, particularly in rural areas, because the identification of a community is often literally fixed around the post office, and the postmark itself is a source of pride. And there was talk about what contracting these out or turning them over to drugstores.
That's or actually other retailers as well. The new Postmaster General mentioned general stores, for example. But yeah, looking at trying to maintain, at least this is a stated goal, sort of the same level of service, but to do it more cheaply. But as you noted, there often is a lot of resistance from members of Congress, from people in the community who do see this kind of, even if they're not using the local post office as much as they used to, they still see it sort of an emblem of their community, and the loss of that, to some extent, diminishes that community.
Beverly Hills 90210, huh? That's not going. Sean Riley of the Federal Times, thank you very much for being on. We're going to do this again, and we need to take a short break. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Thanks, Mike.
If you want great college hoops on your schedule and with a great price, now is the time to purchase your Colonials ticket packs. Visit gwsports.com and click tickets to learn about the great package options for your wallet and your schedule. Get seats for you, your friends, and your family in the renovated Charles E. Smith Center and watch what the Express calls DC's best college team. Visit gwsports.com or call 202-994-6050 for your ticket packages today. Your tickets, your team, your GW basketball.
The underlying battle is trying to lay out the framework for how we're going to deliver services over the internet without saturating the backbone, and do it in a way that you don't censor the internet, which is what net neutrality is getting at, but simply try to moderate bandwidth in a way which is fair.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's not every day that a Washington Monument celebrates a major milestone, but this year, the University of the District of Columbia is marking its 160th anniversary. Since 1851, they've made academic and professional dreams come true for thousands of ambitious Washingtonians. Join them as they commemorate 160 years of scholarship and achievement with a series of events, starting with a birthday gala January 29th. Learn more at udc.edu/160.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formula.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Eric.
How will a 7.3 magnitude earthquake in Pakistan impact the Afghan war? A U.S. military outpost in Afghanistan is very close to the epicenter of the quake, but there have been no reports of significant damage. A Pakistani government spokesman says there was minimal loss of life and property damage, considering that many insurgents hide in the mountains around the area where the quake took place. NATO coalition troops are watching the situation to see if any movement or changes in behavior by the militants result from the quake. I'm J.G. Green.
Can you imagine being responsible for the electronic security of up to 1 billion barrels of emergency crude oil stored in salt caverns as deep as 4,000 feet? Airing Can, their advanced information management platform protects over $80 billion worth of crude oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The stockpile is so important to our national security that there's only one person in the world who can authorize its drawdown. For more information, log on to arinc.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Agencies, you've submitted your sustainability plan detailing out how you're going to reduce your carbon footprint. Well, how you doing? An update from Michelle Moore, the federal environmental executive. And we know there are a lot of feds around here, but where else do feds live? Federally Employed Women has published their survey. We'll tell you about it this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us, and I hope you heard Sean Riley from Federal Times. It was an excellent rundown on what's going on in the U.S. Postal Service, and you've got a stake in that one, whether you are a postal worker or simply a postal patron. And it's archived on our website, so you can listen to this entire show anytime you want and pass it on to a friend. Up next is Steve Watkins. He is editor of Federal Times, and I want to talk to Steve. There's so many things going on now, Steve. I almost don't know where to begin to start, but before we get into the what's happening on Capitol Hill, what's likely to happen to federal workers, what's the situation between the Obama administration and federal and postal unions? As you well know, the unions all supported the president's presidential campaign with great enthusiasm, and they were delighted when he won, and their early press releases, it was funny, we used to joke they were running out of adjectives, but they were in high praise of all the appointees he made and whatnot, but things seem to have changed a little bit.
I think that delight and enthusiasm is pretty much gone down to zero since then. Things are at quite a low ebb, I'd say, in terms of the relationship between federal unions and the Obama administration. And there's a lot of reasons. Certainly, the 2-year pay freeze that Obama came out with very quickly after the deficit reduction report panel recommendation, I think, surprised and shocked many. The deficit commission report itself, which had proposals well beyond just a pay freeze and actually took aim at federal pensions, federal health care benefits, and the federal workforce itself, proposing cuts, pretty sizable cuts there of 10%. In addition, one of the things that I think unions were anxious to see when Obama came in was a resurrection of the Labor Management Partnership Councils. Those were in place during the Clinton administration. When the Bush administration came in, they pretty much shoved those off to the side and were resurrected again by Obama. But even those have taken off fairly slowly, and we've been covering them fairly closely. But to be honest, we've seen very little progress in terms of what they've resulted in.
Well, you know, I think what you always learn, whether you're a union or a lobby or a pressure group or what have you, is a candidate is one thing, a president, someone who's administering and ruling, is another. And it's easy to have high hopes here. I think the pay freeze stunned the unions, and my sense is that the Obama administration thought they would soften it by eliminating or modifying dramatically this intern program that both the American Federation of Government Employees and the National Treasury Employees Union were adamantly opposed to, because they said, and there's some evidence for that, that the government was using it to sort of do an end run around the merit system and bring people, younger people in, fast track them, promise them this, and leapfrog them over people who'd been in the office for a long time. And I think maybe the administration thought that would be enough.
I think they were hoping to win some points with the unions on that, but I don't think they did. I think there's kind of a wait and see mode right now amongst the unions to see what replaces it. There's essentially a new intern hiring program being put in place, and Details as to how that's going to work remain to be seen, and I think unions are concerned that some of the same issues that they had, concerns they had with the federal career intern program, are going to be seen again in the new program.
Well, I thought it was interesting when the Deficit Commission made its report, and much of it wasn't agreed to. I think there had to be 14 of 17 members before it automatically went to Congress. But it's still out there. The ideas are still there. And some of the things they're talking about are going from a high 3-year formula to a high five. High five on the basketball court is cool. A high five in government is a horror term. It means a dramatic a reduction in benefits, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And unions definitely are extremely upset by that, but there's more than just the proposal on converting to a high five formula, but also to rebalance rebalance, I guess is the best word, the contributions that federal employees make to their pension funds.
Yeah, right now the CSRS people put in what, something like 6.5% into civil service retirement and a half percent into Medicare?
Yeah, I think that's right. And on the FERS side, FERS employees contribute something like almost 13% of their wages to FERS plus their TSP plans. So, you know, it's certainly more than CSRS.
Right, and raising the contribution rate, of course, is a net reduction in take-home pay. One thing that's that I'm judging from emails, you know, you think about changing from the high 5-year or high 3 formula to the high 5 worries people, and it does, but I've also had emails from people who said if I work another 6 or 8 or 10 months, depending on their salary level, they will be made whole, so they won't lose money. But one thing that concerns a lot of people that seems to be very low on the radar scope is changing the government contribution to health premiums. By under current law now, it's a complicated formula, as you know, but it's something like the big six health plans, and it's an average of those. But the bottom line is that each year, even though health premiums go up, the government continues to pay about 72% of the average for most people, and that, obviously that's the lion's share of their premium. But since health insurance premiums go up, medical inflation is much higher than regular inflation, particularly in this day and age. Some people are seeing their health premiums could become a major burden on them if the government contribution kind of slips away.
Oh, no question. That would be a huge hit, and that is definitely one of the proposals out there, is that in terms of reforming the federal health care plan, that basically feds would pay a fixed subsidy that would rise something like GDP plus 1%. Well, as you mentioned, federal health plans all over the place. Premiums have been going up by 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes higher percent a year, and over time, that's gonna make a huge dent in somebody's paycheck and their wallet.
Right, people don't understand it, but if you look at, there are an awful lot of us around here who would not be alive 10 years ago, but the advancement in medical techniques and a variety of things has meant that the medical costs are going up dramatically. Steve, if you can hang on for a little bit, I'll come back and talk to you about a couple of other things that are pending. Need to take a short break here on Your Turn, 1500 AM. We'll be right back with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times.
Are you looking for a smarter, simpler way to save? Now you can get the benefits of paper savings bonds without the paper. It's easy to plan for your financial future with Treasury Direct, a secure, convenient, web-based system where you can purchase electronic savings bonds and other Treasury securities online 24/7. Build your savings by scheduling recurring purchases directly from your paycheck, checking, or savings account. Change how you save today. Visit treasurydirect.gov to open your free account.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Visit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and Aview Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
It's not every day that a Washington Monument celebrates a major milestone. But this year, the University of the District of Columbia is marking its 160th anniversary. Since 1851, they've made academic and professional dreams come true for thousands of ambitious Washingtonians. Join them as they commemorate 160 years of scholarship and achievement with a series of events, starting with a birthday gala January 29th. Learn more at udc.edu/160.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard, in cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
If you only want to lose 5 or 10 vanity pounds, sorry, but we can't help you. But if you seriously want to lose 30 pounds or more because you're worried about health risks like diabetes, high blood pressure, or cholesterol, we can help you. And the trial is free when you call 1-800-600-7477 in the next 5 minutes. We're Sensa, and our revolutionary weight loss solution is clinically proven to help you lose 30 pounds or more. And now, for a limited time, you can try Sensa free for a full 30 days if you call the toll-free number in the next 5 minutes. Sensa is proven through science, but works like magic. In one of the largest weight loss studies of its kind ever conducted, more than 1,400 participants lost over 30 pounds on average with Sensa, without changing their diet or exercise routine. If you're serious about losing weight and have more than 30 pounds to lose, call now for your free trial. Call 1-800-600-7477. 1-800-600-7477. That's 1-800-600-7477.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with more than 300 delegates and key speakers from Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, CPMS, OPM, the Joint Staff, UCOM, NORTHCOM, STRATCOM, DISA, DLA, and OSD. Don't miss this year's event, to be held on February 14th through the 17th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington, Virginia. Visit the website hcmdusa.com for more information, and to register, mention code FNR for a $200 discount.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Delighted to have you with us, and we've got the full crew from the Federal Times, Defense Times, here today. And thanks, Steve Watkins, for that rundown about what's going on in Congress and the tensions between unions and the Obama administration because of what's happening and what's not happening. And we're going to get back to Steve next week and be talking about furloughs and that sort of thing. Going now to Andrew Tillman. He is Pentagon correspondent for the Times newspapers. Andrew, you with us?
I am, yes.
Hey, thank you for being here. We had a good time last week, and there's so much going on. I mean, the Pentagon is about nearly one half of the federal government, and if you throw in the military, it's more than that. A lot of stuff going on there, but you had something about TRICARE. If you'd explain what TRICARE is and why it's so important to so many people, particularly in the Washington area.
Sure. Well, TRICARE is essentially an insurance company that provides health care to roughly 9 million people. That includes active duty military, their spouses, their dependents. It also includes roughly half the system is retirees. It's probably the largest insurance program in the country. And there's a lot of pressure building for some of those rates to begin to change as a part of some of the broader cost-cutting programs.
There was a siren going by. How many million people did you say it covers?
About 9 million people are eligible for TRICARE.
That is incredible,
it
because
is an
that's
extraordinarily large system.
That's larger than or about the same size as the entire federal employee health benefits program. So that is huge, and
half of that is retirees.
Okay.
So it's just the system is just sprawling.
Right, and their premiums are very low in TRICARE, aren't they?
They are. In many cases, there are no annual enrollment fees, and that's really the. What's coming under fire? I mean, some of the there are no annual enrollment fees in many situations, and the copays and other fees have not really changed since 1995.
Well, who's pressuring the government to raise the TRICARE premiums?
Well, on one hand, the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, made this a personal initiative. He's talked a lot about how health costs are eating us alive. And within the military, there's some pressure because Department of Defense has a certain top-line budget they have to work with. And the growth in health care spending has been so extraordinary over the past few years that is increasingly eating up a much larger slice of the pie. So some of the pressure comes from within the Department of Defense itself, but also some pressure on Capitol Hill. You know, obviously deficits are a huge concern for a lot of people over on the Hill, and this is the largest health care program in the country, and it's a huge federal expense.
What do they say to people, particularly the retirees, you know, it may have been on the rolls for 30 years now, who say this was part of the deal? I came into the military, low salaries, constant moves, some very dangerous work, and this was part of the promise.
Sure. Well, that is the fundamental sticking point. The retirees that I've talked to, the first thing they say without exception is, you know, they were promised this health care when they initially signed up and when they continued on in the military through to retirement and when they made their retirement plans. And there's a deep sense from the oldest retirees to the newest troops that to be altering these health care policies would be to fundamentally renege on that agreement.
Yeah, there really is a sense of betrayal here. You know, I served my country. I put myself in harm's way, and you told me forever, and now you're changing the rules.
Absolutely. I think that's why some people have talked about one of the most politically palatable solutions might be to just say, okay, well, starting now, everyone that came into the military in 2011 or before will continue to have the arrangement we've always had, but new recruits will be told, you know, that the TRICARE arrangement and the health care arrangement they may have as an active duty service member, as a retiree, that would be different. How different, that's up for debate, but that's what's interesting. Because of that concern and that promise that's been made, it may take many years for there to be a lot of cost reduction in the health care program.
Well, and that's the problem for the politicians, for the bean counters, I assume, in making something prospective and saying, okay, after a certain date, we're going to change the premiums and make them higher. But the savings aren't reflected until years down the road.
Absolutely. That's a big concern for the people that are doing the numbers, but I think I've talked to some of the retirees, and that's really what is on the table right now in terms of this spring and what the Secretary of Defense is going to go to Congress in a couple weeks with, is he wants to raise the rates on the working age retirees, you know, people clock maybe 20, 25 years as an active duty service member, and then they can still have 20 plus years in a second career before they hit the age of 65 when they can be eligible for Social Security and Medicare. So it's those working age retirees who are really under pressure, and they're the ones who will probably face the first hike in rates.
So these in the military, you're talking about people as young as 38, then, aren't you?
Yeah, there are people who are clocking 20 years and getting out with pensions and promise of lifetime health care, and they're under 40 years old.
Pentagon's got to be a fascinating place. I have covered it always, but from afar. But to be over there day to day, what's going on over there?
Well, it's coming up on budget season, and I think there's the Secretary has been outlining a lot of the cuts and changes that he wants to make, and some of those details were revealed a couple weeks ago when he talked about doing things like he ended a Marine Corps amphibious assault vehicle program, and he talked about cutting the troop levels in a couple years. But a lot of the more details are going to come out in a couple of weeks when, I think the second week of February, when the budget actually goes over to the Hill, and some of these details of what the TRICARE cuts, I think, will be revealed when the budget comes out.
We'll get you back real soon to follow that. Thank you, Andrew Tillman, Pentagon correspondent for The Times. And we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to find out what's happening or not at the Social Security Administration here on WFED, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Today, you're being asked to make every dollar count more, to do more with less and still less, and to continue to serve and protect. Yes, if you're in government, making tough choices just keeps getting tougher. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you afford more today, prepare for tomorrow, and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on The Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm glad to have you with us. I hope you heard the three Federal Timesmen we had earlier talking about the Postal Service, about TRICARE, and about relations with federal unions and the Obama administration and what's going on in Congress. Last but definitely not least, we're going to be talking with Witold Skierwinski. Witold, what damage did I do to your name?
Oh, you got the first one right. The last name is Skierczynski.
Skierczynski. Okay. All right. Very good. I have a good friend at Geico, Robert Pivarochek, but everybody calls him Pivo. So, listen, you were
Chimney Pivo. That's cold beer.
Okay. Right. Is it? Okay. Well, that
reacts to that nicely.
That right? Suits him to a T, I must say. You're president of AFGE's Council 222, which is the Social Security group, and you're the lead negotiator in the current contract talks.
Yes.
Now, this is a big deal, and we're so glad to have you on. Actually, a listener suggested that we find out what's going on in Social Security, and I talked to Christina Erling, and she managed to round this up and set it up for us. But you go back to bargaining today, do you?
Tomorrow.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time. I know you're up to your ears in a variety of things. Social Security is obviously one of the largest federal operations. One of the most visible federal operations, and I guess people love it or hate it. Probably most people love it because of that monthly benefit that comes into one out of six people. AFGE is the largest of the federal white-collar unions. What kind of thing can you bargain with the federal government?
Well, the statute has certain limits on what we can bargain. We can't bargain pay and benefits, but we can bargain working conditions. So we have proposed about 50 different articles in our initial contract proposal, which have topics ranging from health and safety, travel, transit subsidies, hours of work and overtime, flex time, work at home, child care, EEO, leave practices. There's certainly numerous technology, the appraisal system, the merit promotion system, the agency's award system. So we do get into numerous areas.
Well, that's a huge range of things, and they're, even though they're not directly salary, I mean, that mm-hmm. Promotions, the health and safety, travel, working at home, that's a huge area. So how are you doing?
Not good. We started, we had a opening session in December of 2009. Before we exchanged proposals, we had sort of a feeling out a couple of weeks, and then we exchanged proposals December 23rd of 2009 and had our first bargaining session with proposals in front of us in January of last year. And it's a year later, and we haven't agreed on any articles, so it's been very difficult.
Well, you know, one of the criticisms, you receive this in The Economist and various other publications, the difference between public unions and private sector unions is that in the private sector, the employer has a sort of an obligation and a duty, and everybody understands it, to be as cheap as possible, to get off with as little as possible, to protect the interests of the company and the stockholders and whatnot. Whereas in the public sector, at least the perception is that since it's public money, it's money from the Treasury, that we can give away the store, and that as a result, public unions, particularly at the state and local government level, have done very well on things like pensions and whatnot, but you're not finding that in the federal sector.
No, like I said earlier, we can't negotiate pay and benefits, so our salaries and our pensions are set by Congress and the President. So the things that we negotiate, some of them cost money and some of them don't. For instance, I'll give you an example, transit subsidies. Now, currently, the agency has a two-tier transit subsidy policy. They give our folks in the Washington, D.C. area the maximum travel subsidy provided by law, and in the rest of the country, they provide $60 a month. Now, we've analyzed all the other agencies of the government, at least that I could get information on, and no other agency seems to have this two-tier system. So we've put on the table, you know, a proposal where the agency would provide the same transit subsidies out in the field than they do in their Washington, D.C. area, and they're opposing that. That would certainly increase costs if they agreed to any increase in the transit subsidy. So there are areas where, you know, there would be a cost increase. In this instance, we think, you know, the agency stands out like a sore thumb in that they have a two-tier system and seem to think that people in the field shouldn't get the same amount of money as people in Washington, D.C. We don't quite understand that, but so that's an area where you have money. Now, in the merit promotion system, let's say, you know, we are at loggerheads on the type of merit promotion system that we should have. The agency currently unilaterally implemented a system which is a test-driven system where you do a questionnaire and a test, it's scored, and they develop a well-qualified list. We have on the table more of a traditional sort of system where you have you take the employee's appraisal and score it. You take if they have got any awards and score it. You take their experience and score it. You take their training. You take their education and score it. And then you list the scores and you put together a well-qualified list. Now, that doesn't cost money, but we think it's fair for the employees to have a system whereby, you know, their performance, their awards, and their experience are the key factors in determining, you know, who should get promoted. The agency feels differently. You know, there's no cost involved, but it's a procedural thing, and it's where we think, you know, it's a rights issue for employees. Flex time is another area where we want, in a field, we have less flex time available for employees than, in the headquarters in Baltimore or in their large processing center. So we've proposed broader flex time. Now, we don't think that would really cost the agency anything. We're not saying they should open their offices earlier or later. We're just saying within the period of time when their offices are open, we'd have you know, more ability to have the individual employee would have more of a choice on when they started their workday.
Yeah, it's a control thing. V, we need to take a short break here.
Okay.
We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, Eagles fans! Tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena.
Catch the Eagles' next home game for Phil Bender Day, Saturday, January 29th, against Lafayette at 4.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on WFED 1500 AM. This week, my special guest is Rick Marcotte, President and CEO of DLT Solutions. Blueprint for Wealth is sponsored by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-practice law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. For more information, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to Fed Talk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, join guest host Tony Vergnetti, Tim McManus of the Partnership for Public Service, and Jim Eisenman and Melissa Mehring of the MSPB to learn more about the cancellation of the Federal Career Intern Program and the MSPB rulings on the FCI.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Can cybersecurity be baked into new applications as they're being developed? Here's Tom Schankweiler, Chief Information Security Officer in the Health and Human Services Secretary's Office.
It is a challenge. I think what we're finding more and more is security is kind of baked into the cycle development process for systems. So there's regular routine checks that go in through the development lifecycle of an application.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Vitol Stravinsky. Did I get that right?
Getting closer.
Getting closer. Good for me. You know, I grew up in Irish and Greek and Italian neighborhoods, and I do very well with Italian and Greek names. And my best buddy was Steve Szabo, S-Z-A-B-O, and it took forever to learn that it's really Szabo. But so I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Vitol is president of the AFGE's very important Social Security Council, and he's the lead negotiator, and they've been at it for a year with Social Security, and so far no agreements. And Vitol, before we go move on to something, the transit subsidy fascinates me. How many of your people are in the Washington-Baltimore area as opposed to the rest of the country?
Well, our headquarters is in Baltimore, so we're not, we're not like many federal agencies who have their headquarters in Washington.
Right.
So the commissioner has a office in Baltimore. Those are mainly non-bargaining unit employees. So we have a handful of field offices that service the public in Washington, D.C. area, you know, about five or six in D.C. and the surrounding suburbs. And we have a hearing office there, and we have a large hearing facility in Falls Church that has about 900 to 1,000 employers. That's
wow.
Employees. That's the main. That's the biggest facility in that area.
So most of your
people, those are the only employees who are really covered by the max, transit subsidy. So most of them aren't.
So the vast majority in Denver and West Virginia and Washington State are, they get this $60 a month as
$60
opposed,
a month.
As opposed to 120?
Right. The agency's proposed a $10 increase, and we've said no at this point, that we don't, that we feel that, you know, like other agencies, there should not be a two-tier subsidy system. And the cost, if you look at, we've done some analysis, you know, if it really depends on where you're at. In like, say, the San Francisco area, you can't get a monthly ticket, and it's very expensive, the transit, local transit costs. In Chicago, I think it's like $86 a month. But if you come in from the suburbs, the further you get from the inner core of the city in Chicago, you have the suburban train systems, which are a lot more expensive. So in many cases cost more than the max. So people are heavy into their pockets on doing that. And what we don't understand is the Commissioner of Social Security is touting the agency as being a green agency and environmentally conscious. And this would be, you know, having a larger transit subsidy be a way of limiting folks who drive to work, and would certainly be assist having a cleaner environment if more folks took mass transit, but
right.
They don't seem to want to spend the money for that.
Right. Well, you know, we mentioned earlier that you don't bargain over wages or pensions, which in the private sector would be huge, but you do have these other issues, and I guess, and I'm guessing here now, some of the contention between labor and management is not so much over the cost of issues, although that's certainly a factor, but sometimes it's a matter of control, and I'm thinking of the argument for keeping the transit security, Transportation Security Administration union free. And one of the arguments was, and it made it in other agencies, is that we need to move people quickly, and we don't want to have to go bargain with a union representative over can we move somebody to the Canadian border quickly? Can we staff this office here, you know, on a turn
right.
on a dime? And I guess in the case of your proposals with promotions and on health and safety and travel, that may be an issue.
Well, in the promotions area, it wouldn't take any extra time. You know, we're not really. I think the agency's proposed a shorter time frame. We have 15. Calendar days now for the posting of a vacancy. They want to go down to 10. That's not really an issue. I'm not saying we're going to agree to the 10, but 5 days isn't going to be a killer in this contract. But in certain, like we have an article on details. Now, some, you know, we have a proposal on details, and sometimes because of illnesses or because of staffing imbalances or people retiring, you know, they need to move people around pretty quickly. And we acknowledge that, and we're trying to present proposals that are fair to our employees on who gets those details, but on the other hand, allow the agency to make a decision.
This is a test of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Operational Area Emergency Alert System. In the event of an emergency, this system would bring you important information.
Okay, fortunately, there is no emergency, but we do need to get out of here. Thank you, all of our guests today. Remember, the show is archived, so you can listen anytime, and we'll talk to you next week here, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Have a good week.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for cloud computing, data center, security, and collaboration strategy and solutions.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies. And when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-400-0861. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-400-0861. That's 1-800-400-0861.